I want to tell you at the beginning a humorous story. There was a certain young couple somewhere up in the northern parts near New York, and they were seeking to climb the social ladder and get into circles of influence. And one evening they were invited to a party. They were glad to accept. When they arrived, there was the usual very lovely meal, and then they retired to a neighboring room where some very erudite subject was introduced. On this particular occasion, a certain lady decided to take up the subject of Mozart, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Well, she began to wax very eloquent about the marvelous music this composer left behind. Another lady, not to be left out, said, "Oh," she said, "I so agree with you. I love his Eine kleine Nachtmusik." And fortunately for her, it was, of course, composed by him. And then the lady of the couple I'm talking about, not to be left out, she said, "You know, ladies, I'm so in agreement with you." She said, "I particularly like his piano concertos." And she said, "You know, I saw him this morning. He was getting on the number 9 bus going to New York." Well, there was quite a stillness in the room, and the very embarrassed husband sidled over to his wife as soon as he could, pushed her out of a side room, and then made their way to the car and homeward in silence. But along the way, the dear ladies couldn't hold it any longer, and she turned to him. She said, I seem to have offended you somehow tonight." "Offended me?" he said. "I should think you have. Everybody knows that the number 9 bus doesn't go to New York." Well, it's a question of what do you know? And that applies to Eastern Europe very much. All of us know that about 15, 16 months ago, the infamous Iron Curtain began to be torn down and the Berlin Wall began to shatter. And just to prove it, my dear friend, I have a little piece of the material evidence for you to see. There's a bit of the wall. I didn't knock it down myself, but it has been taken down. And the fact is, there was a British reporter over there not long ago, standing in the very vicinity where the wall stood, and he said, "You know, the souvenir hunters are selling bits of wall like that for about $10 or $12. And he said, "For those who are a bit more skillful, and they're taking bits of the wall and sticking them on earrings and selling them for twice as much." So those of you ladies, you've always got a problem if you wear earrings. Enough said. If you wear these pieces with a little bit of concrete, they will really make quite an impression. Well, now, the fact is, that part of the world has dramatically changed. And tonight I want to take you both sides of those events and try to capture for you something, not what we are doing, not what many other dozens of workers are doing, but what God is doing. And I want to impress upon you the fact that the tearing down of the curtain and the moving away and breaking down of the wall has not fundamentally changed the powerful work of God that was going on. What it has done is to release a wonderful new lot of opportunities and open doors of which we are delighted and thrilled to have. You see, God was continuously at work. And when I've spoken here in bygone years and across the world thousands of times, the underlying theme I always left with you was this: that this is one of the most thrilling, exciting, fruitful parts of the work and harvest field of God anywhere in the world. Even in those long, difficult decades, when atheism and suppression were the order of the day, nevertheless, God's people refused to be beaten. They refused to lie down under that terrorist pressure. And we have a most thrilling and wonderful historical period behind us. It was hard. Desperately hard, and many suffered. You know the stories of those who suffered. But often the whole story wasn't told, because there were hundreds and are hundreds of thousands of sincere believers who have gathered faithfully and regularly through the decades, often in the most obscure and dilapidated buildings, often in the most difficult circumstances, but remembering the Lord and gathering faithfully and making known this gospel of Christ. And the result is that we have in Eastern Europe today and tonight a church of our Lord Jesus Christ, and I'm talking about the collective body of believers, and there are hundreds of assemblies over 800 of assemblies, and there are hundreds and thousands of other evangelical bodies of believers, those who love Christ, and I will be sharing some of this with you. In fact, I will be sharing so many facts and figures that you won't be able to retain them. And for this reason, out on the front, on the table on the left, as you go up, there is a yellow fact sheet, if you'd like to take it with you, to give you a little idea more factually, more numerically, of what is going on there. But perhaps even more potent and helpful to you is our half-yearly letter, which some of you have received through the years. It's now recently published. This is the latest one, only off the press a week. And it has a detachable sheet. This third sheet you can tear off and keep, because it tells you all about the work that has been mentioned, namely CEEF. That is a foundation, or a charity as we call it. And it is through that charity that all the gifts which are coming to us from across the world, and not least some of them from yourselves, and we thank you sincerely and warmly here publicly, through that particular channel, we are using them for a whole variety of things. Now, one of the tremendous things which has happened over the last year or so, and by the way, if you'd like a prayer card, there's one of those to remind you to pray for us and for those whom we represent. But the important thing I want to emphasize among the many new doors is the wonderful opportunity with literature. Since I was here a year ago, we ourselves, through our very modest activity, we have channeled over 50,000 Bibles and New Testaments in three languages into Russia. We have another 20,000 now lined up, ready to go. During that period too, we have had the joy of sharing and having printed another 50,000 of these lovely children's New Testaments in five different languages. And at the very present time, 30,000 have already gone into Czechoslovakia, Slovakia, and Poland, and we've another 30,000 for Russia and for Romania. Beyond that, the opportunities to spread the gospel. We've had 100,000 gospels printed in Polish, and they went in just before Christmas. Earlier in the year, over 300,000 gospels of Luke and John in Romanian were taken into the country. We shared in the finance and the printing of it as the Lord supplied. And my dear friends, the doors are wide open to present the written and printed pages, you'll hear me say. Another simple but very attractive feature has been the presentation in this cartoon form of some very suitable pamphlets. And this one, that's in English, and this one in Polish, is the very story of the cross. And we've taken in 50,000 copies of that. That will be going out already and will be increasingly helpful as Easter approaches. 50,000 in Polish, 50,000 in the Romanian language. Just a year ago, I was here and present at a very special meal. And our brother John Forrest surveyed the long span of years that so many of you, dear servants of God, have covered in devoted service in your various areas. And amongst those whose name was mentioned was Helen Holdenwelder. She's done such an excellent job on the visual Bibles, as you will know better than I. But as I listened to a little bit of what was being said about her in that series, I quietly asked the Lord, if you've got anything through this ministry of the visual Bibles for Eastern Europe, constrain our dear sister to come and have a word with me. And she did. And she came to me afterwards and she said, do you think these would be helpful in Eastern Europe? I said, I was waiting for you to come because I think they will. In the years since, they have sent me a number of the copies because you know it's a vast work for children. There are 13, if not 14 volumes of these excellent teaching materials on the New Testament alone. Then there's the whole range of the Old Testament and many other ancillary volumes as well. We are concentrating at the moment on the New Testament series. And already I can tell you that some 10, possibly 12 volumes have been translated into Romanian. We have a team of at least 6 in Czech and Slovak working on those two languages. And we're hoping that they will have something ready by May. And we've got another group working on them in Polish. Now, my dear friends, we are not thinking in small terms. Because this is not just a work for the assemblies, it's a work for all the children of God in those countries. These excellent teaching volumes can be taken up to reach the young. In some countries, they've been starved of teaching materials for 30 and 40 years. And I believe that this excellent series can be widely and powerfully and fruitfully used. Now, what we are hoping to do is to see them, first of all, into typesetting, then proofread, and then, of course, they will be coming to the point of printing and publishing. We've many stages to go. I don't have any illusions about how to print and publish materials after the last few years where we've been much involved in these things. But what I can tell you, we are looking to God for great things. Because I anticipate we shall be printing somewhere in the region of a total in the various languages of at least 50 to 60,000 volumes. At least. And we are hoping that they will go out even further afield once they become steadily and widely known in those lands. So we ask you to continue to pursue your support. We know you are doing it. And we praise God for your wonderful fellowship in that direction to what has been done already. And there's a lot more to be done. There's a long way to go. And Eastern Europe is wide open. And without any further ado, I want to take you now to the slides and show you a little bit. And I'm only scratching the surface. I'm going to take you and give you a glimpse of East Germany, now part of Germany, into Czechoslovakia, and into Poland, and then down to Romania. And in that way, to give you a little comprehensive view of just what God is doing and the opportunities that are bound there. Thank you. You'll bear with me while I get all the bits together. In this complicated age, we seem to need so much. Right. Now, let me get that into the right pocket too. I'll try and get out of the way over here. And if we can push that into the middle, thank you, Stuart. And I'll try a little bit of focusing. All right. That's fine. Okay. Can everybody at the back see that clearly? That's better. Okay, let's take it from there. May we have the lights, please? Just to remind you, the Iron Curtain cut through Germany along the bottom of Czechoslovakia, down the left-hand side of Hungary, along the north, or the top of Yugoslavia, and dropped down to the right of Trieste. 9 countries, the smallest little Albania, at last beginning to emerge out of its ice age, and things are happening there, as we know, in a powerful way. You'll bear with me that I don't have time to stop with all the details, but you'll find a few details of Albania on the fact sheet, namely that there are 2.5 million, that it's a nominal Christian background of about 10%, no more, Orthodox and Catholic, nothing Protestant, nothing evangelical of a historical nature. And then we have 8 other countries. This is just the southwestern tip of the Soviet Union. And over the last 25 to 30 years, it's been my privilege to visit there quite a number of times. I've preached in 10 major Russian cities, and the situation was that until the breakthrough 2.5 years or so ago, so cities like Lvov and, shall we say, Minsk and Odessa and Chisinau, they had one evangelical church group. It was an amalgamation. People from former assemblies in that country were in that group and had to be, or else they had no fellowship. Suffice to say, the doors are wide open, and we are hoping to send in addition to what we've sent already, in the next little while, 20,000 Bibles, 15,000 New Testaments, and who knows what lies beyond that, as the Lord may lead and provide. Now, there are 7 other countries left. They varied in their intensity of the interpretation of communism. There were the more liberal or soft-hearted, that was Poland, Hungary, and Yugoslavia. There, the Christians had a certain amount of opportunity. They could get Bibles. They could evangelize. They had Bible camps, and they had various other opportunities to share the gospel, albeit very restricted, but they did have a little bit more opportunity than East Germany, Czechoslovakia, Romania, and Bulgaria. Those four were much more oppressive in their attitude. So the result, in spite of everything, in East Germany, 110 assemblies and 30 full-time workers, quite a number of eventide homes and conference centers, and many other good opportunities in that land, in spite of the oppression. Here in Czechoslovakia was a totally contrasting picture. 150 assemblies, several hundred evangelical groups, very few Bibles, no literature, no youth Bible or camp work, no Bible schools, no opportunities to evangelize, no great campaigns. Only one thing, as I'll show you, they were allowed to have Bible teaching conferences, and they used them. And then Romania I shall come to. Bulgaria is at last beginning to open up. The assembly work was not even legally tolerated. In all these other countries, let me remind you, the Christians were lawfully tolerated. They had a legal right to exist. Very restricted, like a little island in the sea of communism. But they were there, and they were there to stay. So let's go on our journey and see how do I change this thing? Forward. There we go. Let's go through the beauties of Europe. As I'm doing in these days, or during this week, in the evenings I'm taking, as I started this morning, a series of messages from the mountains, from the biblical mountains, God speaking to people. And then we should go in the morning and consider in the light of modern day events what is happening through the book of Daniel. So on our way, we get a glimpse of something of the magnificent Alps and mountains of Central Europe, whether in Austria, in Germany, or in any of these other places. We lived very close to where this was taken for a number of years, and it was quite a long winter, I can tell you. Very nice to look at on a picture scene, but not very enjoyable when you're actually there. And here you get a glimpse of some mighty mountains in the Tyrol of Austria, and yet again, the loveliest of the mountains of Austria. This one, in case you don't know, is called the Grossglockner. It is well over 14,000 feet, and it is one of the highest peaks in Europe. Very lovely in its morning sunrise. Then we take you through the curtain to when the last time I stood and looked through at the Brandenburg Gate in Germany, on the borders of East Germany. In front of you, the wall that was put up in August of 61. A month earlier, I had driven through this gate here, and that was the last time for over a long, long period. But then came the crumbling of the wall. All sorts of things that happened in those intervening years. It was a bitter and repressive regime in East Germany. I had many clashes with the border guards as I was trying to take supplies through to the Christians. I was interrogated numerous times, and it wasn't very, very pleasant. But here behind the wall, the tank traps, it was mined under the ground, and there in East Berlin, the radio tower. So they tried to do all sorts of things to simulate a modern state, but as we now know, East Germany is suffering desperately. I don't know if you are aware of it, but the change to link up with West Germany is not so easy. In point of fact, in the past year, their unemployment has grown. It's multiplied almost 5 or 6 times at least, with a promise of going up to enormously more times than that. They've already got something in the region of 2 million unemployed, and they expect it to go up to 4 million. Out of a 10 million population, working population. So there are problems. And yet in spite of all the oppression, God's work continues. And annually in November, from all over the country in a borrowed Baptist church in East Berlin, some 700 or 800 believers came together. They were glad of the opportunity for fellowship and to share together in a 2-day Bible teaching session. It went on from morning till evening. When we have a conference in Eastern Europe, we have 8 or 9 hours a day. And we don't expect you to do the same, obviously. But the fact is, that's the way they do things in Eastern Europe when we have a conference. The barbed wire that went right across Eastern Europe was something like 1,800 miles in length. Many places it stood 8 and 10 feet high, and also was in many places electrified. One young man from a Christian family in the mid-50s couldn't tolerate the awful oppression of those days and fled from home, got as far as a border point somewhere, not necessarily here, tried to get over the wire and was electrocuted. His father, a doctor, had to suffer greatly because of that, and I was talking to his brother, now an older man, just a week ago on the phone. Over here, Austria, for those who could walk along the local hills, how challenging and disturbing to see freedom so near and not be able to taste of it. But beyond that, we all know that in 1968, in August the 21st, the Warsaw Pact forces came marching in and occupied this lovely industrious little country of Czechoslovakia with their 650,000 troops. They finished up the tanks here at Wenceslas Square in the main street of Prague, and a week later I was able to fly out, and I stood right near here and looked at the grave where a young student had burned himself to death in protest. For the next 22 years, Czechoslovakia suffered a bitter, oppressive regime, and there is the present-day grave, taken just a few months ago when I was out there, shortly after the so-called Velvet Revolution. 10 days in November of 1989, and Czechoslovakia was set free from the awful thraldom of that communism. There's a photograph of young Pollock, the student that burned himself to death. Photographs of others who suffered under the communist tyranny. But you know, it's not all fun after the euphoria is over. There is the great battle of finding your way and where to next. 40 political parties, they wrestled with each other last June to find out which political power would control. They've got some form of stable government. Czechoslovakia is a delightful little country. They are a mixture of the Slav warmth and the Teutonic discipline. They're industrious, clever, and gifted, as we will find in just a moment. And yet, it isn't politics, it isn't bravery, it isn't anything else or even religion, but it is that glorious gospel of Christ, and here you have it in the Czech language, John 3:16. One or two people here might be able to read that out for us far more accurately than I could do so. But you can see the challenge of the 7 to 8 languages with which I've had to do these many years. And we find that here in Czechoslovakia, starved of literature, starved of many evangelistic opportunities, starved of putting up buildings, starved of so much that we would call normal church activity, yet the people of God held together. And they used to have conferences monthly, quarterly, half yearly and yearly. And this is one of their annual conferences, which brought together last Easter and will do again this Easter, something up to 12, 14, 1500 believers. For 20 years I've been associated with it. We had to meet in churches until last year with great restrictions. But last Easter, for the first time, we were able to borrow this lovely public hall, which formerly only the communists were allowed to use. And consequently, things are changing. Amongst these leading brethren at the front, we have some very gifted men, men who have served God faithfully through the years. And amongst the people, the believers of Czechoslovakia, we have hundreds of fine, dedicated, devoted, gifted young people. There are not a few of these gifted choirs. We've enjoyed your lovely singing tonight. I only wish I could have brought a Czech choir over to let you listen. There's one been over here recently from another assembly away in the eastern parts. About 15 young people came over here for 3 weeks, I understand, in December. And they obviously never got as far as you, but the fact is that they are very gifted and much blessed of God. Instrumentalists, various other musical talent, and very fine singing voices. So they are people that are very much in touch with what is going on. In the town where this conference is held, one of 3 major annual conferences, the assemblies had never had its own building. In fact, a good many of the Czech assemblies have never had their own building. And this one included, they had a room borrowed from the local Lutheran church in a city which is nearly 500,000 strong, a mining town. Well, at long last, about 5 years ago, they were offered this old chapel. And I prayed so hard, as so many did, that they would have the courage to purchase it. And they did. Because it's not for the Westerners to dictate to what the Eastern brethren should do. They must find their own way. They have the same Lord and the same Holy Spirit. And in 5 years, using their own architects and engineers, they have transformed that building into this. That's quite some undertaking. It will seat 800. And we're hoping to have the first public meeting there on Good Friday in about 2 or 3 weeks' time, where I hope to be sharing. When I asked them, well, why such an awful color when they painted it 2 years ago before the revolution came? Well, they said, we went to the paint shop and there wasn't any other. Well, that's straightforward. You don't have a problem. And the amazing thing is that this building can be seen from half a mile away. Isn't that funny? So it's got its purpose to tell the message. Amid the joys are the sadnesses. Down in the capital of Slovakia, Bratislava, there labored a brother who was commended from the assembly in Detroit Central Hall in 1928 with his wife. The man was called Brother Sieradzki. And he was on your prayer list for over 20 years. In the 1950s, he was challenged by his authorities as being a spy because he was in touch with North America and sent to prison for 12 years along with 10 other brethren. In that town where he labored grew a very fine and large assembly still flourishing today. One of the elders was Victor Ostrolewski, seen here with his dear wife Eva and daughter Ivana and little Daniela. In February 2 years ago, he was unwell, went for a check, and undergoing surgery, they found terminal cancer with only a few days left to live. God wrought a miracle. He called him home only last month. He lived nearly 2 years, far, far longer than the authorities had so thought. His wife, of course, is feeling the loss, and who doesn't, when a dear partner is called home. But I was with Victor many times last year, even only a few days before the Lord took him. And his love and concern was only for the things of the Lord. At 45 years of age, he was called into the presence of the Master. And his love and desire had been only unto him. We thank God for men like that, and also for this man on the left here. Dr. Jan Sieradzki is the son of the man I mentioned commended from America a few minutes ago. When I first met Mr. Sieradzki, the missionary, back in 63, his son, Jan, had very little interest in the things of God. He had a medical career in front of him. But 3 years later, he contacted me wanting to come to Britain, having difficulty with a visa, to do some cancer research work. We were able to help, happily. We had the right contact in the Foreign Office. And he came not only once. He's been coming ever since. In fact, he'll be over again shortly for the 15th time. But between his first and second visits, God dealt with him. And he became a very sincere but humble believer. A member of the Academy of Sciences, but never a member of the Communist Party. He stood quietly and firmly for Christ. And it was his surgery that we believe under the hand of God helped to maintain Victor's condition for such a long, much longer period than actually understood or expected. Jan's wife, and he's a close personal friend, is Eva, or Eve. She's also a cancer specialist in radiology. But she is not a believer. She is a Roman Catholic, and we're coveting her for Christ. And also the son, Vlado, who is studying law. You, dear friends, who know how to pray, well, you remember, you may not remember Eve and Vlado, but if you can, your prayers will be poignant and powerful and we hope productive in their salvation. Czechoslovakia, as I mentioned this morning, are the peaks, the mountains of Europe. This is one of the highest and loveliest peaks in the Tatra Mountains away to the east. One of the first visits I ever made to a mountain in this country is seen here. On the top of a place, I think it's called something like Tjurske Pleso. And it's certainly in the Tapraca Lomnica area, and it's well over 10, if not 11,000 feet high. And to me, it's a symbol of the people of God in these lands. Like the weather house, it has endured the blizzards, the sub-zero conditions, and so on. And it gets out the message, and that's what God's people have done, and are still doing. They are unashamed of the gospel of Christ. I crossed to Poland, the neighbor of Czechoslovakia. You get a glimpse of the old days, the governmental discipline and authority on the May Day parades. You had no choice. You had to be there. Your life was not your own. Under communism, you were robbed of your personality, of your initiative and creativity. Today, all that is changed. And in spite of the masters of the Kremlin and elsewhere, still trying to produce some kind of discipline control in their own land, in the countries of Poland and elsewhere, there is now this greater freedom and opportunity to live for God. And they are using it. Today, as in the Roman Catholic Church, the churches are full. There's an over 80% following in Poland, and these people are not waiting to go in. They can't get in. It's a festival day. The churches are packed. And yet, it's among these very people that God has been doing such a remarkable work. You see, the great challenge of the last decade and more has been to spread the word of God. And the assemblies faced that challenge in 1980. They broke away from an interdenominational federation where they had been happy but couldn't get on with their own work. And they began to evangelize, and in the last 10 years, they have grown from 35 small groups and assemblies to around 90, nearly three times the number. And their task has been to spread the word of God, and we know that it's the preaching of the gospel, and it's bringing to men and women the truth of Christ that is life eternal. And as they have preached that from the Bible shop, getting the scriptures there, and we used many of those in the bygone years when we couldn't get them elsewhere, now we begin to move in our own literature supplies. And this is not so very long ago. There's a lovely teaching book, and 6.5 tons went in. We've taken in thousands of gospels and other pamphlets and various types of evangelistic material, as I've just told you. And in all of this, there has been wonderful fruitfulness. 5 years ago, this assembly did not exist in the city of Katowice in the south of Poland. Today, it numbers over 120 in fellowship. Hundreds are being reached, scores are being saved, and taking their stand for Christ. And this is happening again and again. And some able people, this young man is a judge. His wife is a judge. There are engineers, officers of the military, and all sorts of people being won to Christ. And we rejoice over it. Just to the south of the last place, there is another assembly where they've had 2 baptisms over the last year, and as a result, they have won some 28 into their fellowship in that year. They are now over 70 strong and pressing on well. And associated with it is a lovely Bible school. Not very big, run on a monthly basis, but young men are taking up teaching and training and going into these newly formed small assemblies and local churches and reaching out with the gospel, as their fellow evangelicals are doing the same. Also in 1980 came solidarity, and with it, the empty shops. People began to starve. We felt we had to do something, and we thought of taking a small truckload, just a van or something like that. But the Lord had other ideas. And within a few short months, we took out our first 20-ton truckload. And we've told you the story. And it wasn't only one truckload. We thought it was going to be one and finished. But no, for the next 6 years, we were going out again and again, taking food and footwear and blankets and clothing and medical supplies. And over the next 6 years, over 200 tons of supplies were taken out. God was preparing us and using that to his own glory. And only just before Christmas, another 4-ton load left our home. And here, the medical supplies going to the hospital, knitted blankets and clothing. In the back, there were 2 tons of 15,000 children's testaments and various other supplies. In this way, there is a continual ongoing flow of supplies. And brothers and sisters, please keep standing with us in your prayer that God will meet the need. We want wisdom as to which doors to go through. There are opportunities enough, but which ones do we use? Now I want to conclude with a visit to Romania. Here is the country, much in the news even today. 25 to 26 million people, shaped like a flounder fish, the tail on the Black Sea, the capital Bucharest with nearly 2 million, the capital of this Transylvanian area where mostly Hungarian is spoken is called Cluj. In that area you have 2 million Hungarian speaking people and about 8 million Romanians. Coming down through the country from the north, I'll show you in a moment, the lovely Carpathian Mountains in here. And to the northeast and the east and around the south, you have another 15 to 16 million Romanians. It is a fascinating country and goes back to the days of the Romans, hence its name. You'll find many Roman ruins. It is a Latin-based language, and this is welcome in the Romanian tongue. And I'm having a little wrestle with the focusing all the time here, but we'll get in there. It's, as I say, a beautiful country. It is a land where we see these mighty Carpathian Mountains, and if I can get it into focus, they are sharp. Oh, there we are, coming through the morning mist. And there we see the mighty, beautiful mountains of the central Carpathian region there in Romania. A very, very lovely part of the world, rich in history. This great triumphal gate goes back to one of the victories fought by the kings of Romania over 100 or more years ago and in the heart of Bucharest. It's no mean country. It was only the despotic leader that brought it to its right down to ruin, because he wasted millions and billions of dollars on building this eight-storied palace, having torn out the heart of a beautiful city in order to start building it, using up to 20,000 soldiers and men to build this great edifice, a little bit Victorian and old-fashioned, populated with hundreds of chandeliers burning tens of thousands of bulbs. And yet, the people themselves were obligated through 5-7 long years. They had no electric power, winter after winter. 140-watt bulb in a room, maximum. And to overstep it would have been a heavy fine. No power for your Hoover, or your vacuum cleaner, your fridge, or your washing machine, if you had them. And not only shortages of power, even in summer, a shortage of water. And the women had to go down and find any fresh water they could, where they could do a little bit of laundry. If you were one of the few with a modern small car, you had to find the same water source to wash it. This was life. The food was short. It was on cards or rationing. Petrol or gas was in short supply. 7 gallons a month, maybe about 8 in your reckoning. But some months there was none at all. And life was hard and bitter year after year. In addition to that, we have the power of the Orthodox Church. It was truly tremendous because they were in league with the government. And the consequence is, although they claim an 80% following, they have no ministry, very little influence. It's ceremonial and it's also ritualistic, with the result there's very little spiritual power. It's a very, very sad situation in one respect. On the other hand, what we have got is within the same church group, the Orthodox Church, there is an evangelical group from a revival in 1920s. And in that period, thousands came to Christ. Some left the church and went to the newly developing evangelicals. But the others remained within the Orthodox Church and called themselves the Army of the Lord. And they reckon they are up to 500,000 strong. They love the Lord. They love His Word. They preach the gospel. They proclaim the necessity of the new birth. They baptize. But their Orthodox authorities will not give them any right to their own legal existence. The government under communism would not allow it, and the present government will not allow it. And so here is a powerful group of evangelicals in the country with no right to self-determination and existence. It's something we might pray about, brothers and sisters. How much we covet our independence and our right to convene and gather as we would, as our brother was praying earlier. But the fact is, even beyond that, there are over 200,000 claimed Baptists, over 200,000 claimed Pentecostals, an estimated 42,000 in some 400 assemblies, and growing rapidly since things changed in the revolution, which I'll come to in a moment. One of the largest assemblies in the country is housed in this building, and it's found right up on the borders of Russia, in a town called Yash. We have the privilege, as we've done with over 150 buildings, of helping financially, in this case with the roof. Sometimes it's with other internal structures, it's with the general building, central heating, it might be furnishings, chairs, whatever may be necessary. And we've helped with over 150 buildings in these 25, 30 years of working in Eastern Europe. And I went out to the opening of this. There were about 700 present. I was there not long ago, a few months ago, and it's grown to 1,100. I've since heard that in the last 3 to 4 months they've grown further, and they are now estimating up to 1,300. And when these saints gather on the Lord's Day, it's 3 hours Sunday morning, 3 hours Sunday evening. And during the 3 hours of Sunday morning, they will not only remember the Lord in the breaking of bread, and they will preach the word, but they will dedicate infants, they will baptize, if they are baptisms due, or you even perform weddings. Can you imagine starting a married life with 3 hour service? That would just about set you on your way, wouldn't it? But right after this wedding, there was a wedding breakfast with 650 sitting down to it. And as we were sharing with the people as guests of honor, I said to them, where did you get so much food to feed this crowd? All they said, we've been saving it for 6 months. So I said, well, I hope that doesn't apply to the fresh meat. But the fact of the matter is, these people know how to work together. But to show you that not everything was totally black under the formal despot, here, an assembly opened only last September a year ago. And another of those we had the joy of contributing in its construction and finance. A very fine building, very modern, very attractive, and with about 450 to 500 in fellowship. These Romanian assemblies are large because they have a lot of large families. From the weddings come the large families. An average family amongst Christians is easily 5 children, especially in some areas. But in some of the cases, they go up to 8, 10, 12, and we've known a couple of cases of 18 children. That's quite something. That's the way to populate an assembly and have a future, isn't it? Well, this is what they're doing. But they need help, and we try to help. You see, I mentioned a moment ago that food is scarce. Bananas they never saw from one week's end to another, a year's end to another. Or citrus fruits, no oranges, lemons, or any of those things. And even today, things are scarce again. This little girl, her brother couldn't wait to have a photograph taken. He was too glad to touch into it, like all men. You know, they enjoy their food. But the little girl coveted and hung on to that banana as something very precious. You see, the truth is that they were desperately short of food for years, and we did what we could. And before the revolution, I want to tell you this, because what was happening was this. Attached to many hotels, there were shops known as comptoirs. They were only for the foreign visitors to go in and buy luxury goods like furs, jewelry, liquor, and tobacco, and hi-fi equipment. Local nationals were not allowed to go into them because they were not allowed to have Western currencies anyway, officially. But if we were staying, and I stayed in this particular hotel many, many times over the last 15 years, and I went in one day and I spoke to the manager, I had a burden. For 2 years we sent parcels. Over 2,000 of them. But it wasn't cost effective. And one thing in our work, we always look to use the Lord's money wisely. We are stewards under him, and you'll see that in the report on CWF. And the fact was, I said to this manager in the place, have you got any food? He said, yes, to my surprise. I said, you got any flour? He said, yes. I said, how much have you got? He said, how much do you want? I said, I want a ton. I thought he'd fall over backwards. He said, oh, you can have it. There it is. A ton of flour. I said, have you got any sugar? He said, yes. How much you got? What do you want? I said, 650 kilos. I took all the cooking oil he had in the place. They're stacked in these things. And up here you'll find some of the higher, richer protein things like margarine, a bit of cheese, a few bars of chocolate for the kiddies, a bit of salami. Things that some of these Christians haven't seen seen in 3 and even 6 months at a stretch. They had ration cards for them, but they never got them. And these things, we called in the elders from the local assembly and passed them over to them. They took them along to the assembly and under lock and key overnight, and then the next day they would have a prayer meeting and distribute to those families I was showing you. But that was in one town. I went to the next town, did the same, and another town the same. Before I finished on that journey in August 87, we had left 8 tons of supplies. We went back again at Christmas and left another 8 tons. And in 88 and 89, right up until the beginning of this year, we were needing 25 tons of food a year by making these special journeys, and there was only one way to do it. I had to carry the cash in my person and on my body. And it meant that sometimes I was carrying anything up to $25,000 and more in cash. That needed the Lord's protection. I had to go through numerous checks at the airport. There was a body search. There were x-rays, and so on and so forth. But the Lord wonderfully preserved. Brothers and sisters, work in Eastern Europe has combined with a lot of problems and dangers. But your prayers, and we thank you for them, along with so many, have helped us along the way. There were others who paid a far greater price. In about 5 to 6 years ago, 20 people were arrested, 11 brought for trial, not for smuggling Bibles, not for selling Bibles, but for distributing them. It was forbidden. He was the man on the end was a ringleader, his assistant. And they were caught after 10 years of distributing Bibles. Godless people smuggled them in, and they distributed them. He is a doctor, the second one here. He is his brother, a physical and spiritual brother, a brilliant engineer in oil research, and he is a building foreman. And these 5, along with the others, were all sent to prison for long sentences. These 2 got 6 years, these got 5.5 years. Of the other 6, 2 were young women under 25 years of age. And President Reagan got to hear about it. And he ordered Kosetsky to release them, and he had to. Otherwise, President Reagan was going to nullify a trade agreement. We thank God for the courage of those things. These men now today are still active in their home country. He is one of the leading brethren in the country, a doctor just retired, able to give himself full time to the work of the Lord and doing an excellent job. Let me hurry on. The last few pictures, the revolution and the heart torn out of the flag and all that went with it just over a year ago. And I was there 2 weeks after the revolution concluded. I saw the desperate battle or the battle for the television tower and room, and right off the site, what it cost in terms of lives and of damage, and then too, those who came to pay their respects through wreaths and candles, who honored those who laid down their lives for the freedom. Just a mile away in the middle of the town, there's this modern hotel, and on the day that Ceausescu's speech failed, on the Thursday morning, by mid-afternoon, crowds had gathered. But as the early dusk came in, their order was given for the tanks to roll over them, and many were crushed to death. I spoke to a Christian doctor who worked in a hospital just around the corner here, about 300 yards away, and I asked him how many suffered. He gave me one singular word in reply, thousands. And the price was not forgotten. On the traffic islands nearby, were at least 3 or 4 monuments of thanksgiving and the wreaths piled high and the candles burning. And they still have small memorials to this day. The price has been great. The challenge has been real. While I was there just over a year ago, and I've been back at least 5 times since, it was a day of national mourning. And there, in the assemblies and up and down the area, as long as we could, we encouraged. We expounded the word of God. We challenged the people and called them out to even greater effort and to take confidence in the God who doesn't change and has given them a new opportunity. This very assembly is moving forward in a tremendous way. While I was there last July, I participated in a baptism of 38, 26 of them here. And amongst the 38, there was a whole family of 5 baptized at the same time. Thrilling. 3 weeks earlier, another 33 had been baptized in this same assembly. 2 weeks later, another 30 were due to be baptized. Hundreds have been turning to Christ throughout Romania in this past summer. It's been a marvelous time of reaping, and the word of God is going out on every side, and it really is a thrill to see what the Lord is doing. All over the country, large evangelistic rallies in stadiums and in all sorts of places where you can gather a great number together, even in large gardens.